Okay, so I'm going to talk about LSND and then talk about a specific idea for explaining it. And I'll spend some time, since this is the beginning of the sterile week, so I'll talk a little bit about other explanations of LSND as well. So this is sort of the plan of my talk. And since if you might have forgotten what LSND was, so I'll remind you what the experiment was and spend a few minutes on that, and then review all explanations and what the current status is, and then tests of this rare mean decay idea. I'll show a existence proof that such a model can be made and how it can be ruled out. So LSND stands for Liquid Scintillator Neutrino Detector at Los Alamos. Carmen, I just learned, Carmen stands for Karlsruhe Rutherford Medium Energy Neutrino Experiment, in case you didn't know. Okay, so what they do is study a proton on target making pions. Pi plus is brought to rest in the target, and then it decays into mu and nu. And since this is at rest, they're both monoenergetic. All this is very important for the data. And then the muon decays by the usual way. And since this is at rest, so the nu mu is a line, and the spectra of nu e and nu mu bar are completely known for a mu decay at rest. Also, the separation of when these arrive in the detector is very, very well defined. The nu mu arrives at the same time as the proton, and this is the beam spill of the proton. This is the time in nanoseconds. And so nu e and nu mu bar arrive a little bit later, and this is their time development in microseconds. So that helps in distinguishing the events. Here is a transparency from an experimental talk, so it's prettier. So here is the proton beam, here is the beam stop, the target, and then the detector to detect the nu mu bars over here. And the L and the E on the average are such that the ratio is about 1, and so electron volt square 1 is what the typical sensitivity of this experimental setup. Then you look for nu e bars in the detector, in the liquid scintillator, by the old Reinerskovan technique, which is standard for all antineutrino detection. Like, you look for this reaction, you first see the positron annihilation prompt signal, and that carries the energy of the initial neutrino, antineutrino. The neutron wanders around, gets captured after a few milliseconds, and you get a 2.2 MeV monochromatic gamma ray. That's the standard tag. The background to this is pi minus decays in flight, gives you mu minus, which decays into this, so you have nu e bars here. And then you have to estimate the rate for this and how it compares to possible signal. And this is estimated to be few times 10 to the minus 4. Actually, it's quite close to 10 to the minus 3. And then you suppress it by software cuts because of the timing difference. And for example, in Carmen, the background from such events is supposed to be 10. And you can compare this to the fact that the signal of the nu e bar, not the background, in LSND is about 100. So. And so as everybody knows, LSND sees a signal, Carmen sees no signal, and then I'll show you the results of the joint analysis that they've recently done. And this is the only claimed appearance experiment versus disappearance. LSND also looked for nu mu to nu e oscillations of nu mu's. Now these nu mu's are from pi decay, not from mu decay. And they're decay in flight, so they're not monochromatic. And they look for nu mu to nu e by reaction on carbon 12 and look for electrons. The signal in this case is rather weak. It's less than 2 sigma. The signature is poor because there is no tag on this. I mean, electrons are a dime a dozen. Background is high, and so this is a less convincing result than the nu mu bar result. And so we'll ignore this for the rest of the discussion.
This is the decay in flight.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's from pi decay, not from mu decay. So here is the result of a joint analysis of Garmin and the final LSND. And this green slice between this line and this line is the final allowed region of the preferred region. There is a small difference in what this region is according to whether or not they include the decay in flight results. And so there are several different plots of this in which the decay in flight is included, not included, and there is, you know, this slight difference in detail. So here is this one, for example, includes decay in flight, so a slightly different region here. So that's the assuming that the signal that saw was due to oscillation. But it doesn't have to be. And so what are the options for explaining this? And so what have theorists done as a function of time about this result? One is you either ignore LSND and just say there are only three flavors and just forget about the result, or live with the four-star neutrino, or give up CPT invariance, or have a rare decay mode. Now, I'll show you what the sensitivity of Miniboon is, but you should notice that Miniboon looks at neutrinos from pi decay, and first nu mu to nu e, and then eventually nu mu bar to nu e bar. So they already assume that the interpretation of LSND is oscillations. So they will test this and this, but not this. Okay. Because they don't study muon neutrinos. Okay, I think we'll hear more about this tomorrow, so I'll be rather brief. So if it is a forced neutrino, sterile neutrino, you have four possible, actually there's more than four, but anyway, mass schemes in how you distribute. In 3 plus 1, and you can introduce this 3 plus 1 in four different ways, where the one is light and one is heavy, and then 2 plus 2 and 2. And so the problems with four neutrino scenarios, so in 3 plus 1 scheme, when one guy is heavy and induces transitions to nu mu to nu e, the conversion probability is given by this formula. And this is just the analog of sine squared 2 theta. And these two elements are bounded by CDHS a long time ago, and this is bounded by the Boogie and Shaw. So with these constraints, then can you get this to be as large as required for LSND? And so this, whether it's possible or not, has been a function of time. And this is an old plot in which this is this plot of that A mu e, and this is the required value for A mu e. And let me see. And this touches this at one point, and that's it. And so this was a few years ago.
What causes those wiggles around one EV split?
These wiggles?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows. Maybe Jose or...
Which wiggles?
This.
One EV squared, there's wiggles there, right?
This wiggle?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, but that can explain the wiggles higher up, but it doesn't explain the wiggles at the nodes.
Honestly, I don't know. I have not
seen I'm not sure. Before. This is from an old, I think it's from Bilenki et al., one of the old ones. Here is your plot. You can explain the wiggle in your plot? Okay. Okay, I'll come back to that in a minute. Okay, this is a recent plot of the same thing, and I think these two plots are from your paper, these two curves. And again, there is the same kind of wiggle here. So this is the paper post WMAP paper where they, pardon?
Carbon junction.
This is Pearson Murayama, but anyway, they put, they took the LSND Carmen, and this is the allowed region now, this slice here. This is WMAP bound if you take it seriously. And then this is the 3+1, 99% and 95%. So here is, you know, their claim is that before WMAP, this region would have been allowed, but now it's not allowed. But anyway.
But I guess this is a bit fragile zone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that, I'm not saying anything. So anyway, the 3+1, maybe it's borderline allowed. Now in the 2+2 case, where we have two pairs of neutrinos, so there must be some stellar mixing in both solar and atmospheric. Now, there are bounds on how much mixing there is from solar and atmospheric data analysis, and roughly speaking, the probability of stellar in each is limited by about 45% and 35% at 99% confidence level. So the total is 0.8. Now, if you say that this should be 1, then there is a problem. And this number is getting smaller all the time as more data are being analyzed.
It's not necessary 1, as we know from
Carmen. Pardon?
It's not necessary.
Well, I'm coming to that. I'm coming to that. And of course, we'll have a whole talk tomorrow, so anyway. And another way of saying the same thing is this is the delta chi square as a function of the amount of stellar mixing in both, this is solar and this is atmospheric, and if you combine them, then you get this curve, and so it's, you know, looks very unlikely, to say the least. Now, there's a caveat, and pointed out by Tom and company, and the point they make is that if UE3, and it's generalization in the 4x4 matrix, the UE3, UE4, and UMU3, UMU4, UMU4, are allowed to be non-zero, then fits to 2+2 are possible. And roughly speaking, what happens is that instead of the two probabilities ending up to 1, now the two probabilities will be 1 minus something, and we don't know what something is. And the question is, can this be large enough to accommodate the data? Pardon?
Tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah. So anyway, so a general analysis in which many elements in the 4x4 matrix are not zero needs to be done before one can conclude. Or future analysis of solar atmospheric makes this chi-square bigger and bigger, then of course you have also a problem.
Somebody has done this analysis?
I don't think so. I mean, including...
It's very difficult to do.
Yeah, I know. I know, that's why it's not done. Yeah.
There was a claim by your suitor that he had done it, but his published work turns off to a little angle, but he claims to have unpublished work, but...
Well, he's.
It's essentially that one three and that one four.
If it wasn't very difficult, you would have done it.
Yeah. Tom, how big it can be?
The deviation
from somewhere.
Well,
the reactor mount. Huh? You should know the reactor mount.
Don't tell me what I should know and what I should not know. Huh?
Well, I can take it, but it can be very large. Some will be 0.4, for example. But Jose says it can be very small. The effect is the subtle. We don't test the fit. Okay. I mean, some parameter can have a large range, but its impact can be zero in the analysis. Of course, we cannot say for sure, because we didn't do, but nobody has done. And I welcome anybody who has a nice idea to do it, because it's just too complex.
Okay, let's...
You say this is the reactor round, you mean this is related to UE3 squared?
It's related, I mean, in a fourth generation scenario, it's more complicated.
No. It's not just UE3.
Not just
UE3. So after you do an analysis,
yeah. But one has some nodes, I mean, one has some intuition of
the
what may change.
Yes,
yes. But you're welcome to do it.
No, I'm not really doing this one.
Okay. So I mean, both are allowed, 2+2 and 3+1, but not, they don't look great, okay? So, to avoid the sterile,
just a waste of time.
People said maybe you have CPT violation, right?
haven't checked.
Okay. So the proposal was that the neutrino masses and the mass splittings are like this, atmospheric and solar. And the antineutrino is the LSND and atmospheric, and no solar here. So the implication of this proposal was that mini-boon will see oscillation only in the new bar channel. And even if LMA is the correct solution, Camland will not see it because there is no solar here. And of course, there is no new mini-E in LSND. And of course, when Camland data came out, and they saw roughly more or less the same mass difference as the solar, then this is ruled out. Because in fact, these papers said that the Camland should not see the same as solar. So that this one is dead.
You can invoke a conspiracy, right?
Yeah, I'm coming to that. People have written papers on that conspiracy. Okay. So, but before I... I'm coming to what Tom is about to say. So I'm forestalling. So, okay, so post-Camland proposal is that...
That's the conspiracy.
That the neutrino is atmospheric and solar, and antineutrino is LSND and Camland, whatever Camland is. And of course, the fact that Camland and solar are approximately equal is just an accident. And when you have enough data and enough accuracy, they should not be exactly equal. That's the idea. And of course, then Borexino and Camland should see slightly different things. Camland and solar should not be exactly equal. And mini-boon will see it only in new mu bar, new e bar. And there is no atmospheric in here. There's no atmospheric mass difference. So if a detector could distinguish neutrinos and antineutrinos in atmospheric neutrinos, you could see this result. And the Indian Neutrino Observatory, which is being proposed, which is basically monolith moved to India, will do that. So,
well, sir, also MINOS should be able to, it has a magnetic field, okay, like the atmospheric neutrinos.
Yeah, if they have enough statistics, they can do it. They can do this.
So the presence here, having antineutrino.
Pardon?
We heard from Ed Kearns in our conference here that even the Super K data, having significant results for antineutrino and neutrino is not very likely.
No, Super K cannot do it. That's clear.
No, he claimed
they can.
They could. Yeah.
Well, at the moment they haven't. I mean, I don't know if they can do it in future.
Well, they show plots, but of course there are.
No. The plots, it's misleading. They show plots claiming that they confirm CPT. But those plots, they fix the angle. So angle is not allowed to be free. Then, of course, then they can rule out this proposal. But this proposal doesn't require the angles to be the same. So, yeah. Or to be maximal. So that, yeah. Yeah, MINOS can do it. So I have just, there's a theoretical point of interest on this proposal, is that if you violate CPT, you have to give up something. And more common proposals for CPT violation are the ones that give up Lorentz invariance, like this, where you have psi bar gamma mu psi with b mu is a constant four vector, and this violates Lorentz invariance and CPT. Now, this proposal does not give up Lorentz invariance, they claim, but gives up locality. And they write the Hamiltonian like this, with different masses for neutrinos and antineutrinos. Now, it seems Lorentz invariant, and that's what...
Pardon?
Exactly. Well, that's... But Greenberg showed that this is not true.
Yes,
and the propagator of neutrinos violates Lorentz invariance. So all loops or even diagrams with neutrino lines in it will not be Lorentz invariant, but nobody knows how much that violation is, so, because nobody has calculated. So it's not really Lorentz invariance. There's a recent paper by Barenboim and Licken in which they claim that the scheme that they proposed there is Lorentz invariant, but I don't know for sure if it's true or not.
It's hard to believe, and how can you break CPT without breaking
Lorentz? Well, no, you look at the assumptions.
Speaking, yeah.
No, you look at the assumptions that go into proving CPT. So Lorentz invariance is one of them. But you can give up hermeticity. You can give up any one. So they're saying that we're not giving Lorentz invariance, but one of the others.
But do they actually offer some realization of that, which is?
No.
They do, but it's very unknown at three levels.
Yeah.
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 Of
this is what
Yeah, but in the new paper, there is a different scheme. Yeah, I'm waiting to hear from Wally Greenberg, see what he says. So mini-bone, I think everybody knows about mini-bone. So they will study neutrinos from pi decays, and they will have L over E, same as LSND. They started taking data in June, and every time you ask them, they say 2 years. They said 2 years in June, and they say 2 years today, before they will announce results. We open the envelopes. So I don't know what's the date. I guess the luminosity is not as high as it was supposed to be. That's the problem, yeah. Anyway, when they're done, they will, this is the region, so they will rule, confirm or deny everything.
It's not that cold.
There are members of Mini-Bone in the Beams division that have been working on this problem for many years. So Mini-Bone has to accept some responsibility.
I didn't know that, sorry.
I see. Okay.
I didn't say all. I did some.
But you mean that they require a smaller flux than they actually need, or what?
They're having delivered a smaller number of protons than they have delivered. Yeah. I don't think there's any experiment at Fermilab.
But is it a function of time that is approaching what they expected luminosity?
Well, that's a long way from where he probably knows better right at the moment, because he was just at a meeting at Fermilab where I'm sure they discussed this issue.
I thought I'd talk about this tomorrow, so I
thought I'd talk about this. All right, okay. Okay, sorry. So, Tom, no more. This is from now on. Nothing to do with your talk. Okay, how's that? Deal. Sorry. Okay, so if it's not oscillation, it can be something else. So you can have a rare decay mode, such as mu plus goes to E plus, mu E bar and something. Another neutrino. Now, if this something is the flavored neutrino, E, mu, or tau, then you can make an SU2 rotation and you can relate it to some other processes by SU2. And then, so for example, if you choose to be nu E, you can make a rotation related to mu to 3E, which is a very strong bound. If it chooses to be nu mu, you can relate it to muonium, antimuonium transitions, which is a bound of 10 to minus 6 in rate. And if you choose it to be tau, you can relate it to tau decaying into mu e. And so these bounds can be converted into a bound for this, which is then smaller than what's required for LSMD.
So?
Pardon?
So how do you manage to get this condition?
This is flavor violating. Lepton number is conserved.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to violate lepton number. So I'll come to that in a minute. In fact.
These don't hurt you.
No, not yet. So something will hurt us, yes. So in fact, now there is a direct bound from Carmen on this mode, which is less than 8 to the minus 4. So there's no way it can explain, even without this indirect bound. So, OK. So we need a lepton number violation. So that means that the decay mode has to be not nu, but nu bar here. So this can be nu e bar, nu mu bar, or nu tau bar. Of course, you can have a sterile neutrino, but we don't need a sterile neutrino. So why add it?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
E plus should be with nu e or anti
nu e? Nu e bar, because that's what observed. This is what LSND sees, so I have to have a nu e bar.
So nu e bar is the lepton number violating place?
No, this. If I remove this bar, this conserves lepton number. Only while it's flavor.
No, you have mu plus on the left.
Yeah.
So if you have a bar,
look, add up.
Thing is with
okay, hold on. Let's go back to the first one. So let's add, count the lepton number. Okay, look at this guy. This conserves lepton number, right? This is 0, minus 1 to minus 1. This conserves lepton number while it's flavor. Okay? Net total lepton number. Okay, it's conserved. And now look at this mode that I'm proposing now. Add up the lepton number. This is minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 3. This is minus 1. Lepton number is violated by 2. Hmm? That's different.
Like double.
Right.
Yeah.
OK. I can reduce the amount of lepton number violation by putting a sterile here. Then it's only one unit. But anyway, it's not very interesting. OK. And interesting thing about this is that this is safe after SE2 rotation. In other words, if you make an SE2 rotation on this, it does not go into any process that is ruled out at this level. And the possible coupling we can write are like this, mu L bar E bar, and then nu, or interchange right and left here. Because there is no choice in the chirality of the neutrinos, but here you can choose either one. I'll show you what happens when you do that in a minute. So, and as I'll show in not too much detail, is you can construct fairly baroque models with many new scalars so that such couplings will arise in higher orders.
So it's a scalar to the scalar type coupling?
I'll show you. Yeah. Oh, it's SP or V plus A, V plus A, depending on which order you write it in. This is SP, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you write it in the conventional charge changing order, then it's V plus A, V plus A, right.
So right.
Right, yeah. And that has an important experimental implication.
Also, we shelf around.
Exactly. So this could come from a coupling like this, with enough Higgs fields. So what happens, if you did make a rotation, then here's an example of what happens. So if I take this coupling, mu L bar E right, this, make an SE2 rotation, you get this. So I choose tau here. Then I get tau minus goes to E minus nu mu bar nu E, which is a lepton violating rare decay mode of tau. So who says that this cannot happen at level 2 to the minus 3? Perfectly okay. So you get such processes only, nothing else.
In fact, this is an overkill. I mean, if you are safe there, you are super safe.
Absolutely. Yes, you're right. Okay, so here is an example of a model in which such couplings will arise. So I introduce as many new scalar fields as I need. Delta is an isospin 1, hypercharge 1. Chi is isospin 1, hypercharge 0. H is isospin 0, hypercharge half. Did I do this right? I think this is wrong. This must be isospin half, hypercharge 0, sorry. Got it backwards.
So there are two triplets?
There is two triplets and one doublet. Yeah. And then these are the couplings I introduce. Yukawa coupling of this guy.
Sorry, and the triplet, the first triplet has y equal to what?
One.
One.
Yeah. And so that couples to the two neutrinos, to a new delta. And then I have, actually this is the, I shouldn't write new here, this is the lepton doublet delta, then H chi phi and delta chi phi phi. And phi is the normal standard Higgs.
So one couples to the three and the other only the Higgs potential. One of the three couples to the three is the standard three,
right.
And the other three are only the Higgs potential.
That's right, yeah. No, right, that's right. Yeah, chi appears only here, yeah. And this requires fine tuning because we do not want any of the new scalars to have vacuum expectation values. So there's fine tuning required.
So if mini boom doesn't see anything
in either channel, new or new bar.
Then there are two possibilities. You and Babu deserve the Nobel Prize, or LSD is wrong. We'll never know the difference.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I'll come to that. No, there is experimental test of this.
Fine tuning, not necessarily. You can just assume positive mass square for some other scale.
Yeah, but that requires fine tuning in the potential to some extent. Yeah.
All you need is to be in the right range.
It's not a point, but in a range, yeah, sure. So here's the graph that from this I can induce the coupling that I want. So the mu E goes to H, couples to chi phi here, and the phi is a vacuum, and then chi delta phi phi from here, and then delta couples from neutrinos. So the coupling, effective coupling in that operator is something like this. And then if I want the branching ratio of 2 to the minus 3 or thereabouts, then there must be at least something that is not heavier than around 400 GeV. You have to take care for some other stuff, like you notice that if you choose the extra neutrino in the decay to be antineutrino, to be electron neutrino, then this combination of quantum numbers is conserved. That guarantees there is no mu to 3 or tau to mu e. If you choose it to be mu, then L mu and L tau are unbroken. If you choose it to be tau, then these two are unbroken. And this guarantees that there are no unwanted L violating decays other than the ones we want or the ones that are not ruled out. It also guarantees that there is no large Majorana mass for neutrinos induced by these couplings. So these symmetries will protect and do that. I mean, otherwise we do have delta L equal to 2, so in principle you could have Majorana masses, so you have to make sure it doesn't happen.
So also the delta has no gap?
Right. That yeah.
All of them.
Right, all of them.
Except the H.
Right, right. I mean, other, yeah, if we had web, we also get Majorana masses,
right.
Yeah.
And how can you prevent other terms?
Which other terms?
Yeah, bilinear, trilinear, or four.
No, these are the only couplings in my model. There are no other couplings. That's my model.
But the quantum numbers for any other term, otherwise it would appear at higher order.
A higher order, but then it'll be too small, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So it's safe. Yeah,
yes.
Anything that appears in higher orders will be okay, it will be small.
Even in the potential?
I mean, there is protection, but it's not...
Well, I'm only...
No, because then you would have small masses.
Well, if the mass... Well, that's what I'm saying, that this guaranteed neutrino mass is small enough. It's small enough.
And the so, regular expectation value is if you get small regular expectation value, it will stay false.
He has no
waves. Well, no waves. Waves are forbidden.
So unless the quantum numbers for B.
That's true. That is some tadpole.
At some high order, maybe, yeah.
You always get them.
At some level.
Some
yes.
Yeah,
so I suppose. You start having all the junk that you want.
Well,
I don't know.
It depends on his mass square.
No, no, that's why I'm asking. It depends. You have to be extremely clever in the choice.
No, for yes, if you start from very big positive mass squares. For the kids, it's very, energetically unfavorable for them to have.
But we do have a. We can't be too heavy because some of them must be lighter than TeV, right? Yeah. So I don't know. So.
No, but usually it's complicated for bees because they always appear.
Yeah.
Anything that you don't want, which is allowed by the quantum.
You should allow, right?
So I don't know whether it's. In nth order it's small, I don't know. I can't tell you. So, yeah.
No, but if you assign like nanos to these kids,
then these will guarantee these.
What I want to say is that then whether these terms appear or not depends whether they violate this leptin number which is conserved or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
This that's is exactly these terms that could create non-zero Lagrange.
Yeah, but I think not all the. Yeah, that is true, but not all the new scalars have lepton numbers, right? So that's a problem. Delta has lepton numbers, so it's safe. But these two have no lepton numbers, so. It's not, you can't guarantee. There. Yeah.
The first obviously has because it couples to the neutrino.
Right.
The second.
So this one has a lepton number.
Things that couple to the neutrino, so it should also have a lepton number.
No, this doesn't couple to the neutrinos.
No, chi doesn't couple to the neutrinos.
Right.
But I'm saying that chi couples to beta, which couples to the neutrinos.
So
the lambda prime term violates
the.
Exactly.
Chi 2
has a lepton number.
So chi you can give a lepton number.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But then
you it's not broken because it doesn't acquire there because you start with this huge positive mass square. In principle.
Yeah, the huge is not huge enough. I think that's the problem.
Exactly
that is the problem. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, there is a caveat. Yes.
All these questions are answerable.
Yeah.
Peter do yes, in principle, yes. So we looked at what other effects of these couplings are there. And here is a shopping list. So it induces radiative corrections to mu decay. And so g mu, this is the standard formula. So now this delta R is changed from the standard model value by 0.001, which is quite safe because already there is uncertainty in delta R of 0.002 from the error in MT alone. So that's no problem. E plus E minus to mu plus mu minus will get contributions from T-channel exchange of the H-naught, and that limits the mass over coupling to be bigger than 380, which is okay. E plus E minus to lepton pair gets the T-channel contribution from the doubly charged delta, so that puts a bound on its mass divided by coupling. E plus E minus to nu nu bar gamma gets the contribution from the charged Higgs, in the doublet charged Higgs. And then, you can emit a gamma from here or here or here. And that gives a bound on that mass and coupling. You get a contribution from G minus 2 from H-naught loop, which, depending on these parameters, can be within the sensitivity of the current discrepancy, if there is one. The doubly charged delta can also be produced as a resonance in if ever we build E minus colliders.
There is no mu gamma.
So anyway, you can have this mode, and it can account for LSMD data consistently with Karman for branching ratio around actually about some a little bit bigger than this. And the experimental test will be, if you repeat a LSMD type experiment with decays, neutrinos from muon decays, there'll be no L over E dependence, none result miniboom, and you look at mu decays. I'll come back to this. And you should expect these new scalar fields with masses around 400 GeV. Now, in the mu decay distribution, this is the standard formula. This is for mu plus and mu minus. This is the spectrum. And rho is the Michel parameter, one of the Michel parameters, and then eta, psi, and delta are the others. And x is the fractional energy of the electron. The standard model, V minus A couplings, rho is 3/4, eta is 0, psi is 1, delta is 3/4. For the two operators that I wrote down in the beginning, describing the rare decay mode, rho is 0, eta is 0, psi depends on which model you choose, it's -3/4 or +3/4, delta is 0. So the rho, eta, psi, and delta will shift in mu decay by this amount, where epsilon is the branching ratio for this mode. And so this is of the order of 10^-3. And so you should be able to see that deviation in the value of rho. Pardon? Right. So here is the current situation. Pardon? Here is what we know right now. So this standard model, current value, and these are the error bars. And this twist is an experiment taking data at Triumph. And they plan to measure these where sensitivity is in 1 power 10^4. And basically, this change means that the slope of this d gamma dx changes by this epsilon. But they can obviously do that. And they will measure all of them, eta, delta, and psi, with these sensitivities. Now,
apart from psi, do they have any competition from PSI?
I don't know about PSI experiments, whether something like this is going on or not. So in principle, they will check rho to the level of 10^-4 and can test a model like this. The only problem is you have to worry about radiative corrections, or alpha, were calculated in 1959 by Kinoshita and Berman. That's pretty big, 4.5%. So that's obviously taken into account in the analysis. But now you have to worry about alpha square log, alpha square log square. These were calculated very recently, and so now they're known. So they can be also taken into account. Except that alpha square has not been calculated. That's much harder. And so all we have is an estimate of how much theoretical error there is by not knowing the alpha square correction precisely. And the estimate by these people is 2 to the minus 4. So that's good enough to test 2 to the minus 3. So to summarize, so let me go again. So no L over E dependence in LSMD. Mini-Boon will not see anything because they look at pi decay. The effective rho will change from 3/4 to 0.7485. And the twist should check it, and new particles, scalar particles in this mass range. So now let me show you why there is a problem. This explanation lives dangerously close to the edge because the Karman bound for this mode is 1.7 10 to the minus 3 at 90% confidence level. LSMD requirement for rho equal to 0 is larger than the published rate because the published rate assumed rho 3/4. So it modified, and Bill Lewis tells me something like this. So, okay, if it is, you know, if you say the branching ratio for this mode is like 1.7, 1.8, it's, you know, you're living right on the edge. It's
even if you do know the decay at best something?
Yeah, yeah, this is all, yeah. It's true. Decay in flight I cannot explain because it's pi decay. So it's a different neutrino. And so there's a small window maybe. But I mean, it seems to me that all explanations of LSMD are dangerously close to the edge. So we'll have these results from these experiments in different timescales. TWIST in maybe 6 months or a year. So already TWIST will tell me whether this is allowed or not allowed. And then CAMLAN plus SOLAR, if you have enough precision, we can check whether CPT is violated or not violated. And Mini-Boon can confirm or rule out any oscillation explanation for SMD. And if they're all negative, then this is what you are saying, right? Who knows? So, that's it. I don't know, it's not being published in physical letters for some reason.
Is it clever? The referee turned it down?
I don't know. Babu was handling everything, and he told me it's coming out, and you know, it's been now over a year, it didn't come out. So I asked him, and he doesn't reply to me. So maybe he forgot to do something.
I don't
know, could be. I don't know, I have no idea.
You know something, I have known for months, writing to the journal, asking for the status of a paper which was never submitted.
Yeah, that could happen. If I write, it could happen if I write to them about this paper and they say, we never got this paper, you know, it's possible.
So, do I understand correctly, if Mini-Boon sees nothing,
yeah,
either LSMD is wrong or this explanation is a lie,
yeah,
and the only test of it is TWIST?
As far as I can tell.
And if TWIST but is running, I don't know.
It's running, actually. They're supposed to be analyzing data. So actually, my guess is TWIST will come out first. So we'll know if this model is killed, then we'll know. And then Mini-Boon results will come later.
And I think this is certainly much nicer than the CPTV.
Well, CPTV is closer to being ruled out, so yeah. Except for this bizarre accident, right?
And if Mini-Boon confirms LSMD, then this is ruled out.
Of course, yes.
It's not ruled out, but it makes it less apparent, probably.
Yeah, it could be a subdominant.
No, but I mean, look. This model has nothing to recommend it, right? I mean, it's not part of any unification scheme, or it's invented to explain one experimental result. If it doesn't explain that, why even?
But it's just to say that it's very difficult to rule out.
Oh, sure. Physics, yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if you don't rule it out, I mean, it's just totally irrelevant to anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to recommend this.
Exactly.
Totally. I mean, the only good thing about this, I mean, this when we discussed this in Seattle in last year, the at first when Babu talked about this, Bill Lewis was very unhappy. And then I told him, look, think of it this way. If Minnie Boone sees nothing, and we are saying that LSND may not be wrong, so he should be happy. So that's the only thing.